The following programming is sponsored by MBC Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Welcome to the Project Chaos radio show, where we honor the legacy of our nation's veterans. Today is Memorial Day, 2024. It's a day of honor and mourning and remembrance. Of what is the question? If you were to look at the top headlines for today, you'd see information about expected traffic conditions. There's one simple goal for Memorial Day. That is to make sure that there are flags placed on the graves of those who died defending this country. But what do most people think of on Memorial Day? What do they think of about Memorial Day? What is it? As the time passes, it's harder and harder to remember who and what. What are we doing this for? I understand we all have busy lives, and not only that, there's a ton of information out there about Memorial Day on the TV, on the radio. It's been playing for weeks now, some of it very repetitive, but for those reasons, I want to bring you something different today, and I want to focus on the honor part. You know, there's no doubt that the defense of the nation is a real burden, not just on our nation's veterans, but on the nation as a whole. We all pay a price. Citizens carrying the financial burden and other burdens, the families of the veterans, everyone who serves, whether they deploy or not. It's really a team effort that really represents a lot about the strength of a nation. We all carry some portion of that burden. But then there's the ultimate price that we talk about, and that's the price of freedom, as fragile as it is. And at least we can know, whatever goes on, that throughout our history, good men have been willing to stand up and do what was right. 1.3 million of them, exactly, paid the ultimate price, some under incredible circumstances, many buried down at Arlington National Cemetery. A couple of weeks ago, we interviewed the family of Michael Crescens. He's a Medal of Honor winner, killed in action in Vietnam under incredible circumstances himself. And the point of that was that Michael stood up, put himself in grave danger. Why? To defend the people that he cared about, that he cared so much about others and their safety, that he was willing to sacrifice his own. And that's really the story of the Medal of Honor. Those who so care and so love the nation that they're defending, that they'll do whatever it takes to defend it. And under the idea of remembering, I want to share with you a couple of these stories today, each one of them incredible. I wish I could read the story of every Medal of Honor citation. There's just simply not enough time. This is the story of Richard Antrim, A-N-T-R-I-M. And what happened was he was taken prisoner of war in a Japanese camp in the Netherlands East Indies in April of 1942, acting instantly on behalf of a naval officer who was subjected to a vicious clubbing by a frenzied Japanese guard, venting his insane wrath upon the helpless prisoner. Commander, then Lieutenant Antrim, boldly intervened, attempting to quiet the guard and finally persuading him to discuss the charges against the officer. With the entire Japanese force assembled and making extraordinary preparations for the threatened beating, and with the tension heightened by 2,700 Allied prisoners rapidly closing in, Commander Antrim courageously appealed to the frantic enemy, risking his own life in a desperate effort to mitigate the punishment. When the other had been beaten unconscious by 15 blows and was repeatedly kicked by three soldiers to a point which he could not survive, Commander Antrim gallantly stepped forward and indicated to the perplexed guards that he would take the remainder of the punishment, throwing the Japanese completely off balance in their amazement and eliciting a roar of acclaim from the suddenly inspired Allied prisoners. By his fearless leadership and valiant concern for the welfare of another, he not only saved the life of a fellow officer and stunned the Japanese into sparing his own life, but also brought about a new respect for American officers and men, had a great improvement in camp living conditions. His heroic conduct throughout reflects the highest credit upon Commander Antrim in the United States Naval Service. What an incredible story. This guy's watching one of his fellow officers, and we don't know the relationship. Maybe they were close, maybe they barely knew each other. But he couldn't stand the sight of watching his brother beat to death like that. couldn't stand it to the point he didn't just sit there in horror. He didn't hesitate. He didn't ask what he could do. He knew what to do. He said, I'll take his place. Joseph J. McCarthy, for conspicuous gallantry at the risk of his own life and beyond the call of duty as commanding officer of a rifle company attached to the 2nd Battalion, 24th Marines, 4th Marine Division, in action against enemy Japanese forces during the seizure of Iwo Jima on February 21, 1945, determined to break through the enemy's cross-island defenses. Captain McCarthy acted on his own initiative when his company advance was held up by uninterrupted Japanese fire, machine gun, and high-velocity 47-millimeter fire during the approach to the airfield number 2. Quickly organizing a demolitions and flamethrower team to accompany his picked rifle squad, he fearlessly led the way across 75 yards of fire-swept ground, charged the heavily fortified pillbox on the ridge of the front, and personally hurling hand grenades into the emplacement as he directed the combined operations of his small assault group, completely destroying the hostile installation, spotting two Japanese soldiers attempting an escape from the shattered pillbox. He boldly stood upright in full view of the enemy and dispatched both troops before advancing to a second emplacement under greatly intensified fire and blasting the strong fortifications with a well-planned demolitions attack. Subsequently entering the ruins, he found a Japanese taking aim at one of our men and with alert presence of mind jumped the enemy, disarmed, and shot him with his own weapon. Then intent on smashing through the narrow breach, he rallied the remainder of his company and pressed the full attack with ferocious aggressiveness until he had neutralized all resistance and captured the ridge. An inspiring leader and indomitable fighter, Captain McCarthy consistently disregarded all personal danger during the fierce conflict, and by his brilliant professional skill, daring tactics, and tenacious perseverance in the face of overwhelming odds, contributed materially to the success of his division's operations against this savagely dependent outpost of the Japanese Empire. His cool decision and outstanding valor reflect the highest credit upon Captain McCarthy and enhance the finest traditions of the United States Naval Service. Lieutenant Colonel Matt Urban, 1919 to 1995, began his active duty Army service July 2, 1941, when he reported to the 60th Infantry Regiment, 9th Infantry Division at Fort Bragg, North Carolina during World War II. He served with this regiment during 6 campaigns in the Mediterranean and European theaters of operation, rising to the position of battalion commander. On June 14, 1944, Urban received a serious leg wound during combat in France. In mid-July, he was recuperating in a hospital in England when he learned that his unit had suffered significant casualties. He left the hospital, hitchhiked back to the 2nd Battalion command post in France. Under heavy enemy fire, he was wounded 3 more times in August and early September 1944, each time refusing evacuation until his battalion was secure. One of Urban's men, Staff Sergeant Evans, had served with him in Europe and Africa when Evans was repatriated to the United States in 1945 after being released from a German prisoner of war camp, prepared a letter recommending Urban for the Medal of Honor. This letter was sent to the Adjutant General of the Army, who forwarded to the Commanding General of the 9th Infantry Division, which was still in Europe at the time. Evans' letter apparently never reached the 9th Infantry Division, as records searched some 35 years later failed to turn up a clue as to any action that had ever been taken on the recommendation that Urban be awarded the Medal of Honor. A copy of the letter was filed in Urban's official records, however, and remained there until Urban submitted a request for information on the award in 1978. The Army Military Awards Branch reviewed Urban's official file, found Evans' recommendation, and began to reconstruct the events that the letter described. Because the Medal of Honor is the nation's highest decoration of valor, there must be detailed evidence for acts of heroism performed, eyewitness statements or affidavits, as well as other documents from official records. In Urban's case, the task of obtaining sufficient evidence was considerably more difficult since the recommendation involved heroism performed more than 35 years ago. As the Army Awards Branch assembled pieces of the puzzle, it became clear that Urban was an outstanding combat leader, highly esteemed by his men. The eyewitness statements, even many years later, showed a remarkable consistency. Each recounted Urban's fearlessness, concern for the welfare and safety of his men, and ability to inspire them to their best efforts. Although Urban had received 2 Silver Stars for his actions in Africa, his valorous actions in France and Belgium in 1944 had not been previously recognized with any military decoration for heroism, except for a Bronze Star for his actions on June 14, 1944. On July 10, 1980, the White House notified Lieutenant Colonel Urban that he had finally received the Medal of Honor. President Carter presented Urban with the medal July 19, 1980, in a ceremony attended by several hundred guests, including 9th Infantry veterans who had served with Urban in combat. According to the citation, Urban's personal leadership, limitless bravery, and repeated extraordinary exposure to enemy fire served as an inspiration to his entire battalion. His valorous actions reflect the utmost credit on him and the United States Army. Really a remarkable story. So many things that he did to leave the hospital and then go and hitchhike back to France. It's really amazing. Why? Because he wanted to be with his unit. He couldn't stand not to be with his unit. He had such loyalty. Amazing to think that kind of dedication. Does all that, gets shot a couple more times, and keeps fighting. Doesn't get the medal for it for 35 years later. It's kind of how it works. On June 16th, 1943, Major then Captain Zeemer volunteered as a pilot of a bomber on a very important photographic mapping mission, covering the formidably defended area in the vicinity of the Solomon Islands. While photographing, his crew observed about 20 enemy fighters on the field, many of them taking off. Despite the uncertainty of a dangerous attack by this strong force, Major Zeemer proceeded with his mapping run even after the enemy attack began. In the ensuing engagement, Major Zeemer sustained gunshot wounds in both arms and legs, one leg being broken. Despite his injuries, he maneuvered the damaged plane so skillfully that his gunners were able to fight off the enemy during a running fight which lasted 40 minutes. The crew destroyed at least 5 hostile planes, of which Major Zeemer himself shot down one. Although weak from the loss of blood, he refused medical aid until the enemy had broken combat. He then turned over the controls but continued to exercise command despite lapses into unconsciousness and directed the flight to a base 580 miles away. In this voluntary action, Major Zeemer, with superb skill, resolution, and courage, accomplished a mission of great value. In many stories you'll hear, it's interesting when you talk about acts of valor, frequently you talk about Marines and Army soldiers, infantry or special forces. These are the guys that are the tip of the spear, closest to the action typically. But you find that the Air Wing and the Marine Corps, the Army Air Corps back then, and of course the Air Force today, that these guys flying into these dangerous areas, sometimes under incredible conditions, and they're high-value targets. High-value targets for the enemy. So you'll hear so many stories of incredible acts of valor on the part of these pilots, these crew chiefs, and so many different actions that they took because they wanted to save the lives of their fellow Marines, fellow Army. And really, I think some of the greatest acts of caring about the entire military come from the Air Force and some of the air support crews in the Army and the Marine Corps. This is the story of Robert E. Roeder. Captain Roeder commanded his company in defense of a strategic mission. Shortly after the company had occupied the strategic hill, the Germans launched the first of a series of determined counterattacks to regain this dominating height. Mostly, especially in the earlier battles before air superiority and satellites and things like that, you would find that these hilltop areas where we could gain long sight distances were extremely valuable positions. The Americans had taken one. The Germans wanted it back. Completely exposed to ceaseless enemy artillery and small arms fire, Captain Roeder constantly circulated among his men, encouraging them and directing their defense against the persistent enemy. During the 6th counterattack, the enemy, by using flamethrowers and taking advantage of the fog, succeeded in overrunning the position. Captain Roeder led his men in a fierce battle at close quarters to repulse the attack with heavy losses to the Germans. The following morning, while the company was engaging in repulsing an enemy counterattack in force, Captain Roeder was seriously wounded and rendered unconscious by shell fragments. He was carried to the company command post where he regained consciousness. Refusing medical treatment, he insisted on joining his men. Although in a weakened condition, Captain Roeder dragged himself to the door of the command post, picking up a rifle, bracing himself in a sitting position. He began firing his weapon, shouted words of encouragement, and issued orders to his men. He personally killed two Germans before he himself was killed instantly by an exploding shell. Through Captain Roeder's able and intrepid leadership, his men on Mount Bagalia, against an aggressive and fanatical enemy's attempts to retake this important and strategic height, his valorous performance is exemplary of the fighting spirit of the United States Army. Truly an amazing story. He would continue fighting up until the point that he had died. Fight to the death. This is the mission of our military. This is Sergeant Porter, a member of Company G, distinguished himself by conspicuous gallantry and outstanding courage above and beyond the call of duty in action against the enemy. Advancing under the intense under the cover of intense mortar and artillery fire, two hostile platoons attacked a combat outpost commanded by Sergeant Porter, destroyed communications, and killed two of his three-man crew. Gallantly maintained his position, he poured deadly accurate fire into the ranks of the enemy, killing 15 and dispersing the remainder. After falling back under a hail of fire, the determined foe reorganized and stormed forward in an attempt to overrun the post. Without hesitation, Sergeant Porter jumped from his position with bayonet fixed and, meeting the onslaught in close combat, killed six more hostile soldiers and routed the attack. While returning to the outpost, he was killed by an artillery burst. His courageous actions forced the enemy to break off the engagement and thwarted a surprise attack on the main line of resistance. Sergeant Porter's incredible display of valor and self-sacrifice and consummate devotion to duty reflect the highest credit upon himself and the noble traditions of military service. Truly remarkable. Here's the story of Ronald Schur, Staff Sergeant Ronald Schur II, distinguished himself by acts of valiantry above and beyond the call of duty on April 6, 2008, while serving as a senior medical sergeant, Special Forces Operational Detachment Alpha 3336, Special Operations Task Force 33, in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. Staff Sergeant Schur was part of an assault element inserted by helicopter into a location in Afghanistan. As the assault element moved up near a vertical mountain toward its objective, it was engaged by fierce enemy machine gun sniper and rocket-propelled grenade fire. The lead portion of the assault element, which included the ground commander, sustained several casualties and became pinned down on the mountainside. Staff Sergeant Schur and the rest of the trailing portion of the assault element were likewise engaged by enemy machine gun, sniper, and rocket-propelled grenade fire. As the attack intensified, Staff Sergeant Schur braved enemy fire to move to an injured soldier and treat his wounds. Having stabilized the injured soldier, Staff Sergeant Schur then learned of the casualties among the lead element. Staff Sergeant Schur fought his way up the mountainside under intense enemy fire to the lead element's location. Upon reaching the lead element, he treated and stabilized two more soldiers. Finishing those life-saving efforts, Staff Sergeant Schur noticed two additional severely wounded soldiers under intense enemy fire. The bullet that had wounded one of these soldiers had also impacted Staff Sergeant Schur's helmet. With complete disregard for his own life, Staff Sergeant Schur again moved through enemy fire to treat and stabilize one soldier's severely wounded arm. Shortly thereafter, Staff Sergeant Schur continued to brave withering enemy fire to get to the other soldier's location in order to treat his lower leg, which had been almost completely severed by a high-caliber sniper round. After treating the soldier, Staff Sergeant Schur began to evacuate the wounded, carrying and lowering them down the sheer mountainside. While moving down the mountain, Staff Sergeant Schur used his own body to shield the wounded from enemy fire and debris caused by danger close airstrikes. Reaching the base of the mountain, Staff Sergeant Schur set up a casualty collection point and continued to treat the wounded. With the arrival of the medical evaluation helicopter, Staff Sergeant Schur, again under heavy enemy fire, helped load the wounded into the helicopter. Having ensured the safety of the wounded, Staff Sergeant Schur then regained control of his commando squad and rejoined the fight. He continued to lead his troops and security elements until it was time to move to the evacuation landing zone for the helicopter. Staff Sergeant Schur's actions are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great risk upon himself and his unit, reflecting the highest traditions of the United States Army. With the Corpsman stories and the stories of saving others under heavy fire, it's really remarkable how the focus will shift. And you hear these stories, right? When you hear the Marine on Iwo Jima, or the Army in Germany, where one soldier, well equipped and a great shot, could take out 15 enemy, killing six more with his bayonet. And here's a lone combat medic saving multiple special forces operators, putting himself at grave risk. In all of these cases, willing to do whatever it takes to accomplish the mission. Truly extraordinary. Should be an inspiration to everyone. The Medal of Honor reflects that sacrifice for sure. That's why it's awarded the highest award. But did you know that there are 38 recipients of two Medals of Honor? Frank Baldwin from the Civil War and the Indian campaigns. Thomas Custer from the Civil War, both Medals of Honor. Henry Hogan from the Indian campaigns. William Wilson from the Indian campaigns. Smedley Butler, Mexican campaign at Veracruz and also the Haitian campaign. Dan Daly from the China expedition and the Haiti campaign. John Cooper from the Civil War. John Cooper won a second after the Civil War. John King, both during the Civil War. John Lafferty, Civil War, both. John McCloy, China expedition and the Mexican campaign at Veracruz. We did a show on a little bit talking about Smedley Butler at Veracruz and the fighting that went on there. It was incredible. Very close combat, very vicious fighting. The Civil War, of course, was the same. Patrick Mullen, also two from the Civil War. Robert Sweeney, Civil War, two Medals of Honor. Albert Weisselbogel, two Medals of Honor, Civil War. Lewis Williams, both Civil War. Lewis Kakela, World War I, two Medals of Honor. Charles Hoffman, World War I, two Medals of Honor. John Kelly, World War I, two Medals of Honor. Matej Kokak, I can't pronounce this, Matej Kokak, World War I, two Medals of Honor. And the last one, John Pruitt, two Medals of Honor from World War I. What an incredible distinction that they would have two of them. Really exemplary service. How many times can you stand up and take action like that? But I think for many of these guys, particularly in these other campaigns, it was just so ingrained in who they were and what they were about that it came automatically. When you read the stories, you'll learn that there was no hesitation. And any of these guys that you're able to talk to, you talk to the families, they say, would you do it all over again? And the answer is always the same. Yes, yes, and yes. Selflessly sacrificing every time. There were no Medals of Honor prior to the Civil War, but we've had great men standing up and fighting valiantly since the Revolutionary War, fighting here on this land and all around the world. We had the Revolutionary War, then the Civil War, the Indian Wars, the Spanish-American War, the Philippine Insurrection, the Boxer Rebellion, the Mexican Campaign, what they call the interim years, World War I, the Nicaraguan Campaign, Haiti, World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, Operation Iraqi Freedom, and Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. And there was many other conflicts in between. Those are just a few of the major ones. Fighting in places like Belle Wood, fighting to take back Europe from serious evil dictators. You ask yourself, how does that happen? It takes good men. This is the story of Private First Class McGinnis. For conspicuous gallantry at the risk of his own life above and beyond the call of duty, Private First Class Ross McGinnis distinguished himself by acts of gallantry above and beyond the call of duty while serving as a 50-cal machine gunner with 1st Platoon C Company, 1st Battalion, 26th Infantry Regiment, in connection with combat operations against an armed enemy in northeast Baghdad, Iraq, on 4 December 2006. That afternoon, his platoon was conducting combat control operations in an effort to reduce and control sectarian violence in the area. While Private McGinnis was manning the 50 cal machine gun, a frag grenade was thrown by an insurgent, fell through the gunner's hatch into the vehicle. Reacting quickly, he yelled "grenade," allowing all four members of his crew to prepare for the grenade's blast. Then, rather than leaping from the gunner's hatch to safety, Private McGinnis made the conscious decision to protect his crew. In a selfless act of bravery in which he was mortally wounded, Private McGinnis covered the live grenade, pinning it between his body and the vehicle and absorbing most of the explosion. Private McGinnis's gallant action directly saved four men from serious injury or death. Private First Class McGinnis's extraordinary heroism and selflessness at the cost of his own life above and beyond the call of duty are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflects great credit upon himself, his unit, and the United States Army. I can't speak to what they were doing there. Did they tell us a little bit more of that than I missed in the city? No, it does not say. It just says while serving as a machine gunner with combat operations against an armed enemy. Well, yes, it was conducting a patrol. There we go. So they're out on patrol, presumably in a Humvee. Doesn't say that. Maybe armored, maybe not. And they've got the machine gun, right? The 50 cal machine gun up on the turret. Maybe it was a bigger. No, we believe if there's four inside, it would have likely been a Humvee. 2006 would have been the era of the Humvees. And there he is. The grenade comes in. How old was he? 19 years old, 20 years old? Likely would have been a lot of chaos going on, lots of distractions. The easy thing for him to do to save himself would have just been to pop out of that hatch. He could have almost just rolled out, maybe ended up with a concussion or something like that. But instead, in an instant, there was no time to think. This all happened so quick. The grenade comes in, it's ready to go off. The guys in the Humvee probably turn their faces away, hunch down, try to get as much protection from their flak jackets and helmets as possible. Wasn't going to help much inside that vehicle. This kid jumps down and he lays on the thing to absorb the blast, saving the other four. We didn't hear anything about the other four in this story. Love to hear those guys' story. Can you imagine? Can you imagine you're sitting there and you look with horror as this grenade pops in and your brother hops down and lays on it and it goes off? Imagine the minutes and the hour after that, the days after. And they don't just send those guys home. They got to go back to work. They got to process that and move on while their brother just died, giving his life for them. How much does that mean, that sacrifice? I think it gives you a little glimpse into why veterans share this strong bond that we do. Because we know that, you know, despite the shenanigans, despite the things that we did to each other, despite the carrying on, sometimes just raw beatdowns, I'll just say it, at the end of the day, we would fight to the death for each other. We would do anything for our brother. And you don't see that in society a lot. Here's another story. Captain Barber, for conspicuous gallantry at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty as a commanding officer with Company F, in action against enemy aggressor forces, assigned to defend a 3-mile mountain pass along the division's main supply line and commanding the only route of approach in the march from, I cannot pronounce this, Captain Barber took position with the battle-weary troops and before nightfall had dug in and set up a defense along the frozen, snow-covered hillside. This is Korea, by the way. When a force of estimated regimental strength savagely attacked during the night, inflicted heavy casualties, and finally surrounding his position following a bitterly fought 7-hour conflict, Captain Barber, upon repulsing the enemy, gave assurance that he could hold if supplied by airdrops and requested permission to stand fast when orders were received by radio to fight his way back to a relieving force after two reinforcing units had been driven back under fierce resistance in their attempts to reach the isolated troops. Aware that leaving the position would sever contact with the 8,000 Marines trapped there and jeopardizing their chances of joining the 3,000 more awaiting their arrival for the continued drive to the sea, he chose to risk loss of his command rather than sacrifice more men if the enemy seized control and forced a renewed battle to regain the position or abandoned his many wounded who were unable to walk. Although severely wounded in the leg in the early morning of the 29th, Captain Barber continued to maintain his personal control, often moving up and down the lines on a stretcher to direct the defense and consistently encouraging and inspiring his men to supreme efforts despite the staggering opposition. Waging desperate battle throughout 5 days and six nights of repeated onslaughts launched by fanatical aggressors, he and his heroic command accounted for approximately 1,000 enemy dead. In this epic stand, in bitter sub-zero weather, and when the company was relieved, only 82 of his original 220 men were able to walk away from the position they so valiantly defended against incredible odds. His profound faith and courage, great personal valor, and unwavering fortitude were decisive factors in successful withdrawal of the division from the death trap in the Chosin Reservoir sector and reflects the highest credit upon Captain Barber, his intrepid officers and men in the United States Naval Service. He was a United States Marine. Incredible story. You'll hear this. I don't know of the Army story so much. I'm sure it happened. But there are times when the Marine Corps would defy orders, we'll say. And this is one of those cases where they were ordered to withdraw. And he said, I'm not going to do that. Not going to do that. And ends up going on to get a Medal of Honor. And incredible that he wouldn't leave either. He could have been, you know, he had every reason to want to get himself out of that situation. Instead, he chose the hard route. He chose to do what was hard. He chose to do what was right by his Marines. And I hope that with that legacy will always continue. The leadership of the United States Marine Corps. We were very fortunate to have incredible leaders ourselves. And I just hope that the future generation of Marines can bring that same level of leadership. It's vital. It's vital to the Marine Corps. It's vital to our military. We don't have good leadership. We're going to have a difficulty with command and control. Things aren't going to work the way they're supposed to. And you see captains like that in situations like that, and the incredible ability they have to motivate men to fight and to carry on, to hold their position, whatever the case might be. Like, you look around at what's going on in the world today, we need it as much as ever. This is the story of the Army First Lieutenant Burke. Distinguished himself by conspicuous gallantry and outstanding courage above and beyond the call of duty in action against the enemy. Intense enemy fire had pinned down leading elements of his company committed to secure commanding ground when First Lieutenant Burke left the command post to rally and urge the men to follow him towards three bunkers impeding the advance. Dashing to an exposed vantage point, he threw several grenades at the bunkers, then returning for an M1 rifle and adapter, he made a lone assault, wiping out the position and killing the crew. Closing on the center bunker, he lobbed grenades through the opening and with his pistol killed three of its occupants, attempting to surround him. Ordering his men forward, he charged the third encampment, catching several grenades in midair and hurling them back at the enemy. Inspired by his display of valor, his men stormed forward, overran the hostile position, but were again pinned down by the increased fire. Securing a light machine gun and three boxes of ammunition, First Lieutenant Burke dashed through the impact area to an open knoll, set up his gun, and poured a crippling fire into the ranks of the enemy, killing approximately 75. Although wounded, he ordered more ammunition, reloading and destroying two mortar emplacements and a machine gun position with his accurate fire. Cradling the weapon in his arms, he then led his men forward, killing some 25 more of the retreating enemy and securing the objective. First Lieutenant Burke's heroic action and daring exploits inspired his small force of 35 troops. His unflinching courage and outstanding leadership reflect the highest credit upon himself, the infantry, and the United States Army. It doesn't tell us where this occurred, but can you imagine you're moving through the battlefield and a grenade's coming your way and the platoon commander catches it and throws it back? This had to be the most amazing time for these soldiers to be out there and to be attacked by such an overwhelming force, and to be able to move through that and navigate that in such fashion is really extraordinary and a reflection of the Army. It really is, our great American Army. Sergeant Charlton, a member of Company C, distinguished himself by conspicuous gallantry above and beyond the call of duty in action against the enemy. His platoon was attacking heavily defended hostile positions on commanding ground when the leader was wounded and evacuated. Sergeant Charlton assumed command, rallied the men, and spearheaded the assault against the hill, personally eliminating two hostile positions and killing six of the enemy with his rifle and grenades. He continued up the slope until his unit suffered heavy casualties and became pinned down. Regrouping the men, he led them forward only to be again hurled back by a shower of grenades. Despite a severe chest wound, Sergeant Charlton refused medical attention and led a third daring charge, which carried to the crest of the ridge. Observing that a remaining encampment, which had retarded the advance, was situated on the reverse slope, he charged it alone. Was again hit by a grenade, but raked the position with devastating fire, which eliminated it and routed the defenders. The wounds received during this daring exploits resulted in his death. But his courage, superior leadership, and gallant self-sacrifice reflect the highest credit upon himself, the infantry, and the military service. Really an incredible story. It's just that so many times you hear these incredible soldiers, incredible Marines, they're charging into positions, and not only in defense, where you see the Army soldier who jumps on the grenade. And there's many of those stories. Guys catching a bullet, guys eating a grenade for their brothers. And it really is the ultimate sacrifice. Can you imagine laying down on a grenade and giving your life right then and there for guys that you came a million miles away? It's incredible. But there's these other stories where in incredible pursuit of the fight, that resolve to win no matter what the cost, it's just as equally as important. And you see it so many times. I was reflecting on a story last week. Australian corpsman in the early parts of Vietnam. I didn't know Australia had soldiers in Vietnam. He was a corpsman or a doc. And he talked about this one position being completely overrun. All the guys in the unit had been killed. His job was to go along and collect all that. But he said what was interesting is these guys were in their trenches and they still had their rifles sighted. And their eyes were open. They literally fought to the death. They wouldn't back down for anything. It's that amazing tenacity, that amazing courage, that amazing care for each other. That's what Memorial Day is about. It's that spirit that makes this country great. It's that spirit that allows this country to endure. That is our legacy. Listen to this story. Merritt Edson, for extraordinary heroism, above and beyond the call of duty as commanding officer of the 1st Marine Raider Battalion with Parachute Battalion attached. During action against enemy Japanese forces in the Solomon Islands on the night of 13 to 14 September 1942, after the airfield on Guadalcanal had been seized from the enemy on 8 August, Colonel Edson, with a force of 800 men, was assigned to the occupation and defense of a ridge dominating the jungle on the other side of the airport. Facing a formidable Japanese attack, which augmented by infiltration had crossed through our front lines, he, by skillful handling of his troops, successfully withdrew his forward units to a reserve line with minimum casualties. When the enemy, in subsequent series of violent assaults, engaged our force in a desperate hand-to-hand combat with bayonets, rifles, pistols, grenades, and knives, Colonel Edson, although continuously exposed to hostile fire throughout the night, personally directed defense of the reserve position against a fanatical foe of greatly superior numbers. By his astute leadership and gallant devotion to duty, he enabled his men, despite severe losses, to cling tenaciously to their position on that vital ridge, thereby retaining command not only of the Guadalcanal airfield, but also the 1st Division's entire offensive installations in the surrounding area. Amazing. That commitment to keeping that position. And this is why it's our enemies fear us. That valiantry, that dedication to duty. I'm going to tell you this story a second. It's a story that's pretty widely known. It's called 6 Seconds, and I think it really speaks to what we talk about with Project Chaos and the ability of veterans to see through the chaos. In this story, 6 Seconds, two Marines were out on a guard post somewhere, godforsaken nowhere in the middle of Iraq, around Nowheresville, okay? Nobody was around this outpost. There was maybe 300 Marines, Iraqi forces there, something like that. Not a lot of people. Anyway, they were just recently put out on guard duty. They just got out there. And it was a young Marine, maybe 18, 19 years old. and a little bit older Marine, maybe 20, 21. I forget where they were from, but they were from different parts of the country, barely knew each other. Just got their orders of the day from the officer of the day, just got up to their post, and they're manning the entry gate. They're only out there just a few minutes, and all of a sudden, a truck comes racing through the zigzag of the Jersey barriers, increasing rate of speed. They had 6 seconds. They went back and played the camera footage. The initial time that the truck broke through the first plane of the Jersey barriers to the time they fired on the truck was exactly 6 seconds. They had no time to react at all. They reacted, they shouldered their weapons, they took aim, and they fired, killing the driver, destroying the truck, and in the process, exploding it at the main gate, both losing their lives in the process. But what did they do? They saved the 300 that were there. And it's amazing hearing some of the stories. Some of the Iraqis were so moved by that. They don't see that type of thing going on in their ranks. And to see the Americans to behave like that was very foreign to them. You'll hear story after story. Army, Navy, Airmen, Marines, across the board, good men, good women, willing to do whatever it takes. Why? Because they love their country, they love their brothers, and they're not going to stand by idly and allow bad things to unnecessarily happen to good people at the hands of bad people. They're the people that stand up and say, no, we're not going to allow this to happen. People like Joseph Foss, for outstanding heroism above and beyond the call of duty as executive officer of Marine Fighting Squadron 121, 1st Marine Aircraft Wing at Guadalcanal, engaging in almost daily combat with the enemy from 9 October to 19 November 1942. Captain Foss personally shot down 23 Japanese planes and damaged others so severely that their destruction was extremely probable. In addition, during this period, he successfully led a large number of escort missions, skillfully covering reconnaissance, bombing, and photographic planes, as well as the surface craft. On 15 January 1943, he added 3 more enemy planes to his already brilliant success for a record of aerial combat achievement unsurpassed in this war. Boldly searching out an approaching enemy force on 25 January, Captain Foss led his 8 F-4F Marine planes and 4 Army P-38s into action, and undaunted by tremendously superior numbers, intercepted and struck with such force that 4 Japanese fighters were shot down and the bombers were turned back without releasing a single bomb. His remarkable flying skill, inspired leadership, and indomitable fighting spirit were distinctive factors in the defense of strategic American positions on Guadalcanal. Here's another one I think we should have time to finish here, and that is the story of Greg Pappy Boyington, a World War II fighter ace and Medal of Honor recipient, Colonel Pappy Boyington, who lived 1912 to 1988, shot down a total of 28 Japanese aircraft during his wartime service. He started in Army ROTC, later joined the Marine Corps, and if you don't know his story, after he was later shot down and captured and held in a Japanese prison camp for 20 months, his memoir inspired the 1970s TV series Baba Black Sheep. You might remember it. I grew up watching it. It's something to check out. A great story all the same. I have to tell you, it's a real honor for me to share those stories, even if all of them don't fit into the perfect mold of, you know, exactly what Memorial Day is supposed to be about. I think you can agree. In every one of those stories, those incredible men paid a high price, and they did it voluntarily. I will say this to you. It's a real honor to me to even speak of it. It really is an incredible journey. I told you I wanted to bring you something a little bit different, and I wanted to celebrate the honor and the legacy. But I also wanted to share this before I let you go. Two little things here I'm going to share with you. Chapter 7 from my book, Victory Over Chaos. The chapter is titled, Remember the Fallen. And then I want to share with you the remarks for Memorial Day from the Commandant of the Marine Corps. But let me begin here with what I said in Chapter 7. Remember the Fallen. There were 143 KIA and 298 total deaths in Desert Storm. You've heard the saying, freedom isn't free, and it's not. The question is, what's the cost? The answer is $1.3 million, bought and paid for, thanks to the 1.3 million veterans who are giving their lives to protecting freedom. Servicemen and women, Marines, sailors, soldiers, and airmen, the 1.3 million warriors that have died defending this nation. 1,300,000 of those men and women stood shoulder to shoulder. They'd span from New York City all the way to Richmond, Virginia. 1,300,000, that's the population of San Diego. Some of them are buried in Arlington National Cemetery, a cemetery that covers 624 acres. Freedom isn't free, and that's the cost, 1.3 million, 624 acres. The bigger question is why? Why did they give their lives, and what did they give it for? You see, there's a common bond that's shared by every veteran, living or not. In all branches, it's the same, the oath of enlistment, promise to uphold the Constitution. It's a blank check made out to the American people with a simple promise to defend the freedoms defined in the Constitution for an amount up to and including their lives. That's what service to the country is about. We call it honor. It's not about political foreign policies, fighting foreign wars, or even being the world's protection force. It's about something much bigger than that. The purpose of the United States military is to protect the Constitution and freeing loving people from tyrants. Marines have lost their lives in battles around the world. Iwo Jima, Guadalcanal, Chosin Reservoir, Wake Island, Saipan, Okinawa, and Bella Woods, to name just a few. Fighting for the cause of freedom in valiant fashion never seen in history. Conquering evil dictators, restoring freedom to millions, and creating hope for people around the world. Young men since the dawn of our country who saddled up, rode off, knowing full well they might not come back, selflessly gave everything they had for one simple purpose. It's not political, but spiritual. This country has always been a beacon of freedom for people around the world, but it's under attack. It's always under attack in one way or another, and that's why it's so important to remain diligent, not just for us, but for the hope of humanity. And here's the bigger point that I think people ought to really pay attention to now. It's a warning. What am I talking about? It's a warning that when freedom is under attack, if it isn't restored by peaceful means, then the likely result is the death of good men to defend it. And none of it would be necessary if more people would stand up, make their voices count, support the Constitution, demand it be honored, and vote accordingly. This country wasn't always free, and it'd be a big mistake to take it for granted even now, especially now. It took bold men to stand up to tyranny and take up the fight for freedom. Notice a big difference in the ideology of the oppressors and the warriors. One says that people should expect more for the government from themselves. It's selfish. The other side says they will lay down their lives for your freedom. It's completely selfless. One is completely selfish, another is completely selfless. Which one of those ideologies would you say is a better bet? Freedom is a tenacious thing. For most people, I'm convinced, not all, but for most people, there's a deep natural desire to live freely. Sometimes fear sets in, and people will warm to safety and security in favor of freedom, but they'll always want freedom, no matter how dangerous it is. And then there are a few, the ones who have decided that it's their cause to fight for freedom and, if necessary, to defend it with their lives, and for good reason. They realize how important it is. Some gave a lot. There's a saying, some gave all and all gave some. It's true that dying in combat is the ultimate sacrifice. Not just the price that's paid by the veterans, but also paid by their families. The veteran suffers once. The family suffers every day. It's also true that all gave some. To be a veteran means to sacrifice. Low pay, being deployed away from family, and having life disrupted by events outside your control. It all takes a toll. This is why we say all gave some. But I'd like you to consider a third group, those that gave a lot. Think about the Marine shot and killed in Vietnam compared to the soldier who comes home and dies 10 years later from Agent Orange. Who sacrificed more? Who gave more? There's a book called Unfortunate Son. It's the story of Chesty Puller's son. If you don't know, Chesty Puller is a legend among Marines. He's the most decorated Marine in the history of the Marine Corps. Chesty is the name of the Marine Corps mascot, a bulldog named in memory of Chesty Puller. The book, Unfortunate Son, tells the story of his son, a young Marine officer in Vietnam, following his father's footsteps. He ends up getting one hand, both legs, and his balls blown off. The story reads like the boulevard of broken dreams. He suffers until the day he dies. And many veterans do. They suffer every day. Some of them are from our own unit. It's a difficult burden to bear, but bear it proudly, because we must always remember we are the compass for the next generation, and how they see us persevere, they will persevere. Also because we represent the Corps, even after our active duty is ended. That's chapter 7 from my book, obviously from a Marine perspective. I want to make an interesting point. I said this third group, the group that gave a lot. Think about the Marine shot and killed in Vietnam compared to the soldier who comes home and dies 10 years later from Agent Orange. Who suffered more? Who gave more? Interestingly, we interviewed the family of Michael Crescence, Corporal Michael Crescence, Medal of Honor winner, shot and killed in Vietnam, Army. And he was shot and killed on the battlefield while his brother, also active duty Marine Corps, combat veteran in Vietnam, died years later from Agent Orange. The exact scenario I described there, hypothetically, exact opposite, happened to their family. It's really true, the sacrifice that's made by some of these families, and I think it's important to remember that as well. I want to leave you with a message from the Commandant of the Marine Corps, the Memorial Day memo, with my own remarks added. Memorial Day is our national day of remembrance to honor the men and women of every generation who gave their lives in military service to our country. A proud tradition for over 250 years now. As I overlook Arlington National Cemetery from my office, I realize it would be impossible to find better words to honor their sacrifices than those spoken here by Union Army veteran and future president James Garfield on May 30th, 1868. He said, "We do not know one promise these men made, one pledge they gave, one word they spoke, but we do know they summed it up and perfected by one supreme act, the highest virtues of men and citizens, love of country. They accepted death and thus resolved all doubts and made immortal their patriotism and virtue. In observance this solemn day, I charge all Marines to join me in honoring and celebrating those of this and every generation who sacrificed all for our nation, our ideals, and their brothers and sisters in the beloved Corps, our Army, our Navy, and our Air Force. We must remember that we must always be ready to fight, even tonight, to answer our nation's call, just as past generations of Marines have always done. This requires the dedication of every Marine, soldier, airman, and sailor to take care of our own, because every Marine makes a vital contribution to the Corps and our military, on or off duty, exercise vigilance and sound judgment in all that you do. Don't let carelessness or poor decisions keep you from the next fight. Semper Fidelis." I want to say this, even for civilians, this message applies to everyone in our country. We all need to stand up and join together in an important time right now. If we're going to preserve this freedom for the next generation or anything resembling it, it's going to come back to us. There's nobody else. We have to take action. We have to do the right thing. And we have to stand up for what's right, selflessly, just like so many before us. If we don't do it, who will? God willing, we'll be back next Monday. Sure hope to see you there.